You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Mara Lanner. She's an artist that lives and works in L.A. Mara, thanks so much for being with us today.
It's an honor to be here. Thank you for asking.
Mara, what is it that you're working on now? What's happening in your studio at the moment? There's a lot of your work I'd like to talk about, but to begin with, what are you involved in now?
I'm working on a couple of different projects. One is a very large public art commission that I've received through the metro, the new metro line that's happening on Crenshaw Boulevard that's connecting all the main arteries of Los Angeles' new metro project to Los Angeles International Airport. So I'm really honored to be a part of that project. It's a large glass pavilion that I'm right at the beginning of designing and working on. And that's one thing. The other thing I'm working on is an ongoing project that I'm calling the Burnout Series that are, it's basically drawing on black velvet using a chemical that removes fibers from the pile of the velvet. And they're very large pieces that are things that affect me that are based on loss and extinction, like, and there's a wide variety of things, like landscape and portraits of animals and people who've been incarcerated wrongly for 30 years. And I mean, it's just this huge archive I've been collecting since 2001. So, and I always work in a couple of different ways in my studio. So usually it's studio practice and then some kind of commission outside of that, because I have a varied background, and I try to appease all of the different elements of me that need to be satisfied. How's that?
I like that. I like that. Let's talk a little bit about privacy burnout. The image that I'm looking at is from your website. It's 101x83, and it has the words on it, do not photograph,
yes,
sound, and lots of other images. That looks like a fascinating process. Can you tell me a little bit about what that is? It looks almost like it's burned, but it's a chemical process on silk.
Yes, it's a classic. My background many, many years ago, it's almost a different lifetime now at this point, but my background is as a clothing designer. That's where I started off a million years ago. So this whole process is combining things that I learned in the garment business many years ago. And what this is that you've seen it in garments. It's called burnout. And it's an etching process where I apply a chemical to the surface of the velvet, and it destroys the soft part, the kind of pile part, the protein, the cellulose fibers of the rayon, and it leaves the silk backing. So I'm kind of drawing by negative space in that regard. And I like the effect of that because it creates, as you said, this kind of apocalyptic, burned kind of effect. And I allow the chemical to destroy the fibers as well. So it gets really gnarly in places and very clean in other places. And the other part of it is the stripes, the horizontal stripes that you can see in that image, are done with, I apply an archival PVC glue PVA glue that creates a very kind of complicated surface that looks, it's my homage to velvet painting is what it is, but it also creates this kind of odd juxtaposition between the soft and the hard on the surface.
Hmm. And what's happening in there? I mean, you were talking about memories and personal things. This one feels, because of, you know, the difficulty of reading parts of it, it does feel that it's part code, part diary, part confession, part conversation. How do you see these in terms of a narrative? Is there a narrative here?
There is, and what this one is based on, I don't do a lot of text work. This is one I've done maybe three in the many years I've been an artist, but this one is basically, it's a little easier to see in person, but not really, because it goes in and out of visibility. But it's based on a very standard photographic waiver when you get your picture taken. You know, that a photographer or filmmaker will ask you to sign this waiver to give permission that your likeness is being reproduced. And in this case, I'm saying that you can't do any of that. You can't take my picture. You can't photograph me in any way. You can't record my voice. There's no sound recording, no likeness, no nothing. And this was in relationship to, it was done in 2014. It was in my response to things like Google Glass and Edward Snowden's revelations about what was happening with the NSA. And I had just kind of had it at that point with the destruction of our privacy. So that's what that is.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And that is such a powerful influence over over our whole culture now, right? This,
yes.
And Edward Snowden to me was a, you know, almost like an awakening for me, you know, or maybe for the whole country. I like to think I was aware of all those things, but I never was to that extent.
Well, I think, you know, since the 70s, we've had this inkling that we've been under surveillance. I mean, there, you know, there's surveillance cameras all over the place. You know, and artists have been dealing with this subject for a long time. So I think we've been understanding in a kind of ubiquitous, you know, understanding the ubiquitous nature of all of this stuff, but I think we really just got overwhelmed. So that I was noticing when that information came out from Edward Snowden, there was a lot of people's reactions to it were, well, what else is new, and why, you know, why would I be concerned? I'm not doing anything wrong, right? But then the whole nature of the extent of it was so overwhelming and so powerful and so terrifying that I think, like you're saying, people became more aware of the extent of it. So that's what that work is. That particular piece is about that.
And then there's another one in the extinction burnout, which mm-hmm. is, that's essentially the same process, right? This is I'm looking
right.
at one that's of a bird,
yeah.
And it looks so rich. And I know you've done printmaking, but it almost looks like the kind of hard to see without being in person. But it almost looks like those rich blacks that you almost get when doing printmaking, monoprints, or something else.
Right.
Is it that rich? I mean, it looks like it has
yeah.
incredible.
It is that rich. That's the thing about black velvet is it's utterly black space. You know, it's like the big black mm-hmm. hole of material. And she is. That's why I'm using that material because it has such. It's so complicated. You know, it's so complex. It's got the reference to black velvet painting and the history of velvet as a garment and as, you know, aristocracy and all of these things that go on and on. Reference to tapestries because these are all quite large. You know, these are very large pieces. I just made one that's 17 feet by 8 feet. That's a landscape, so they're very large. This is the last passenger pigeon, Martha, that last year was the 100th anniversary of her extinction. The only pigeon that's indigenous to the United States. So that's a homage to her, and she's named after. She was the last one of her ilk. And she was in the Cleveland Zoo and died there, and her little body was shipped to the Smithsonian and taxidermied, and she has this wonderful attitude of kind of like, you guys screwed up big time. So I used her image as a homage to her and her species.
And the one you said you're currently working on is, mm-hmm. is 17 feet long?
17 feet long by 8 feet tall. And it's a collage of different landscapes that were taken from a series of the, quote, weather events that happened around hurricanes. There were two different hurricanes that I extracted images from media sources, newspaper sources. And they're, it's the, I'm blanking which two they are right now, but it's basically a whole, it's a collage, an ongoing collage of that, of, I think it was, Oklahoma and Michigan, two of the huge tornadoes that happened. And as I said, it's ongoing. The one I'm working on currently after that 17-foot one is fires that have happened in the Los Angeles area and people and things like that.
Wow, and where will that be exhibited? I mean, that seems like it's really on the scale of your public projects. That's what
mm-hmm.
It's
very large, and it's the reason why it's not up on my website yet is I'm having a hard time figuring out how to get it photographed properly because it's so big. You know, so it's an interior. I need to figure out a place to photograph it where it's not just tiled together. So I get you get the sense of what it's like. I'm looking. I'm in the middle of negotiating with different places to have a show of all of these pieces. That so hopefully, knock on wood, I'll be able to show the whole Burnout series. Because to me, the effect of it isn't just that it's landscape or portraiture or about animals or people, but it's this or privacy or ideas or one thing. It's all of these things together that have affected us. So that's hopefully. I'll keep you posted. I'll let you know.
Okay. Well, also just the sensuality of the material and the depth of those blacks. It seems completely absorbing the way I that's how I see black, is this kind of it just sort of absorbs everything. This
right.
Yeah. And
that's exactly right.
And that is a kind of. It is a sort of public scale, isn't it? I mean, there's very few artists that I've ever interviewed, if any, that are working that large on a piece that isn't a public project.
Go ahead.
No, you go. You go ahead. Tell me.
I think that what had happened is I work on a broad range of scales. And then once I started this Burnout series, this project, I realized that the thing that was necessary for it to really be effective is that they're either incredibly large or incredibly small. Like I did make a couple that are very tiny, so they're very intimate, like very tiny, like the size of like 10 by 8 inches or 10 by 10 inches. And it's because I want to evoke the material helps to become, it becomes much more weighty and much more effective when it's that large. If it's too small, it's just a piece of fabric. If it's large and has scale and girth, then it has a sense of monumentality. And because these things are so, they're gone. Things that are gone, they're lost, extinct. They're irreversible. I wanted to give a sense of mourning and all of those things to it. And the scale, that's what the scale does. And it's very effective because they're so large. I don't always work this large. I have a very small studio, so it makes it complicated to work this large. But it's effective. They seem to work better.
So that's interesting. How do you work that large? You're working in sections on one piece?
Exactly.
So you've never probably seen the whole thing laid out. Is that correct?
The 17-foot piece, I was able to work all at once because I had this residency in Taos that I had a very large space. I was there for 3 months, and it enabled me to make that piece at that scale. And I made it as big as the wall that I had, which was 17 feet, and the floor allowed me to lay it up on the, lay it up and work on it horizontally and vertically. So usually what happens, because my studio is considerably smaller, is I do work in sections. And the landscape I'll do next I'm going to work is a triptych. So I'll do, maybe 8-foot panels or 10-foot panels that will multiply up. So that's it makes it a little bit unnerving to work in sections and not see it. But I do a lot of studies beforehand. I do a lot of drawings and drawings on black paper to figure out the kind of composition and where I want things to be placed. And then I just go for it. There's a translation that happens between a smaller drawing and then a larger scale that I find exhilarating, that I'm never exactly sure what's going to happen. And that, to me, is the artistic process, like letting things unfold as I'm making them. It's very exciting. So maybe that's built into the process, too, is I want it to be a little bit unknown.
And how does that, I'd like to talk a little bit about the public projects now and how you approach those, because that doesn't have the same kind of surprise quality. That surprise quality sounds, of scaling something up, or even printmaking has that surprise quality to it. As I see it, what about the public work? Does that also have that quality or no?
Well, that is a great question. I think, you know, for me, the surprise quality in the public projects are, oh boy, that is such a good question. Let me explain it, come at it from a different avenue. Because I have a design background, the public projects remind me a little bit more of that approach, where it's slightly more collaborative. You know, it's like I have to work with different public entities and stakeholders and get feedback and have, you know, collaborative ideas bounce back and forth, and there are restrictions and all of these things. So instead of going into my studio head where I allow these maybe problems that I have to overcome in the process take place, I let the problems happen in the design work, you know, the initial design that I'm proposing. And then everything else is very much about, like when I was a garment designer and I did a little bit of architectural remodeling, it reminds me of that. Because then it's just problem solving. You know, it's like working with contractors or working with the public entity, or, you know, all of that becomes problem solving. So it appeases a certain part of my brain that then can be entertained in the studio in a different way. So and there's, you know, there's things that happen. Like I just literally finished a piece literally about 2 weeks ago that has taken 6 years to come to gestate. You know, so it took so long. And there was still some variables in the installation, even though I had everything really precise. I knew exactly what was going to happen. There were still decisions that had to be made in the overall installation. It was a 40-foot piece by 18-foot tall. And there were some things that had to be decided on. And that's always where the art, to me, the art lies, you know, is in making those, where there's problems and challenges and all those things. I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, you did. The public projects seem to me a big part of your process. Would you say that's half of your studio process, or
mm-hmm.
how do you view it? Yeah?
I mean, I think it's even less than half. Because I do so many other things. I do a lot of. I've been doing a lot of printmaking and doing a lot of smaller pieces of black and white or black paper drawings. I do a lot of drawing. Most of my work is based on drawing. That's where it all starts. Is perception and ideas of drawing. If anybody were to ask me what I did, I'd say I do drawing. So it all lives in that area. So I do tons of work, and that sounds so hyperbolic, but I do a lot of work that is outside, that doesn't get shown, because it all ends up being either manifested in the public work or manifested in these other projects that I've done. Like, I work with a lot of different types of materials too. Like, I've worked with powdered carbon and drywall mud, and I mean, it's whatever I can make a drawing out of, I will make a drawing out of. So
I mean, the drawings are also very beautiful, of course, and relate. I mean, especially the ones that I've seen, or I've looked through the landscapes or alternative landscapes.
Mm.
Is there one aspect of your work that people tend to relate to more? Is there you know, without bringing in the market too much, is there some of your work that appeals more to collectors or to viewers rather than others? I mean, the public work aside. I mean, I ask that because you do so much different work and are so prolific and productive. I would think that there's areas that are being maybe called for more by an audience or a group of collectors, if that's the case or not.
You know, here's the thing, is that the reason why I'm hesitating is because I have a couple of people who collect my work, and they're very supportive and they're really good about it. And then it's unpredictable where it all comes in after that. So it's kind of like my work. And here's the thing, is that when I stopped practicing as a designer, right, and again, this is a lifetime ago. It's hardly even me. I made a decision that I really wanted to make work that was about as based on what my interests were and not market-driven. And this was in, I started all over again, in my schooling, and I started as, after being a professional until my late 20s, I went back to California Institute of the Arts as a student. And that marked, that marked the separation between me as a commercial artist and me as a fine artist. So I made that pledge to myself, and although I've shown in galleries and I've had gallery representation, I don't really adhere to the way that the market will work. And so it's hard for me to answer that question because I have loyal collectors, but they're loyal to me, not to a body of work. You know, they'll purchase pieces or support me based on different elements that I'm working on. And that's both served me as an individual artist. It hasn't served me very well as a commercial artist, you know, as a marketable artist. But I wouldn't change that for anything. I've been very, I feel independent, you know, because of that, so I can do all these different things, and I'm not tied down. So I hope that answered your question, because it's complicated in that way. It's like I've maneuvered for many years out, both in and out of that system, and still, to me, it's the priority is always the work. So whatever the work serves the work, that's where I go.
That does make sense, and it does answer my question. I'm tempted to end the interview on that note because we're almost out of time. But is there something that you want to talk about your work that I've missed? I mean, there's tons of things that I've missed, I'm sure. But that's kind of a powerful way to end. So, Mara, thanks so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate your time.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for asking.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIVC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.